When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
They say that you can take the girl out of the South, but you can't take the South out of the girl. But can you take comedy out of a rom-com? Well, that remains to be seen as we attempt to prove to you that Sweet Home Alabama is not that bad. Welcome, welcome, one and all to It's Not That Bad, the podcast that looks for A grades in B movies. Now, when it was pitched for us to do the movie that we are talking about today, anytime I hear the words Sweet Home in Alabama in that order put together, my first thought is, oh yeah, I know that song. It's Werewolves in London. But normally, we don't talk about music on this show. That's for the other show. We're talking about movies today, but we're still going to be talking about Sweet Home Alabama. And here joining us for the first time ever is Vanessa from the Movie Duel podcast. Vanessa, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Hi, Jason. I'm good. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I am doing really, really well. Now, normally when we have someone from the Movie Duel podcast, it's Peter. But now tell us a little bit about your role on the Movie Podcast or the Movie Duel podcast.
So I joined about 9 months ago. Peter's original co-host had decided to leave the podcast. So he was looking for people to come on a kind of rota basis. So we met through another movie podcast. So I go on kind of once every couple of months to talk about different movies and stuff. So I've been really, really enjoying that. In fact, I think I've got one coming up with them at the end of this month. So fairly new into podcasting. I've only been doing it about like 8 or 9 months, but I just like talking, and it's a good way to talk.
Basically. Well, luckily we do a lot of talking here, so that's okay. Now, normally too, when you're on the Movie Duel podcast, you're usually talking about movies that you like. So yes. What is it about Sweet Home Alabama that made you want to come onto this show and talk about it?
I've always really liked it. I didn't realize until I was doing some research yesterday how old it was. In my head, I thought it was maybe about like 15 years old. I had no idea it was over 20 years old. And I first saw it in the cinema, I think with my mum, and I would have been about 18 at the time. And I don't know, something about it really clicked with me. Like, I'm not a massive rom-com fan, but I do quite like a good, light, sweet, easy to watch rom-com. And to me, this is just like exactly what it says on the tin. It's nice, it's sweet. Parts of it are quite funny. It's not probably the funniest rom-com, but it's just a really easy kind of comfort watch, I suppose. It's the type of thing I can put on if I'm maybe not feeling very good or feeling a bit down, and it just makes me feel instantly better. So yeah,
everyone's got to have those feel good movies. And I could see how this would be someone's feel good movie. But before we get too far into talking about the movie, before we dive too far into Alabama, it is time to take this Reese Witherspoon rom-com and trailerize it.
How well do you know the one you love? What mysteries does she keep under lock and key? What secrets are she hiding? You'll start to ask yourself that after watching Sweet Home Alabama. Melanie Carmichael has taken New York by storm after leaving her stormy past behind. Now, on the cusp of marriage, she must return to her sordid past of vandalism, debauchery, and feline combustion in order to get her first marriage annulled. All she knew appearance is the signature of the man she once loved, who holds the pen over her head like a sword of Damocles. One can't let go. One can't wait to let go. Who will give in? Reese Witherspoon is the adorable cat killer in Sweet Home Alabama. Rated PG-13 for Pass the Grits.
I was waiting for someone to serve up grits in this film. It really leans heavily into a lot of those Southern tropes. But funny enough, the producer of this film kind of had the same life experience. They left Alabama, changed their name, and made a name for themselves in the movie. So kind of feels like it fits, I guess, the creative aspect of it. But let's get into who's in this film. The movie stars Reese Witherspoon, Patrick Dempsey, Josh Lucas, Candice Bergen, Mary Kay Place, Fred Ward, Jean Smart, and Ethan Embry. However, there is an almost starring in this one. Before we get to the main one, Catherine Town had a role in this film as Melanie's assistant, who eventually marries Patrick Dempsey's character after the marriage is called off, but those scenes were dropped. But the big one here is the role of Melanie Carmichael herself, as played by Reese Witherspoon. Apparently, it was supposed to be Charlize Theron. I don't know if I can picture her in this.
No, I read that yesterday as well. And this is going to sound bad because I actually really like Reese Witherspoon. But at the time, I think Charlize Theron was taking on like meatier roles. Whereas Reese Witherspoon, I think she'd only just recently done like Legally Blonde when this came out. And I don't know. I think they're both really good actors in different ways. Like, I think Charlize Theron, actually, I rewatched The Devil's Advocate recently and I forgot that she was in that, and she's actually really, really good in it. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I can see it. I think it would be quite a different movie if she was in it.
I think it's one of those things where you take a look at someone's, you know, body of work and sit there and say, I don't think of Charlize Theron the minute I think of rom-coms. Like, it's just not there. Like, yes, she is a phenomenal actress. Yes, she has the ability to disappear into her roles. Is she a rom-com actress, though? I'm not quite sure. But Reese Witherspoon, on the other hand, kind of fits the mold a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think just looking at, like I said, Legally Blonde, that she'd done not that long ago, I think she definitely fits the mold a bit more. Having said that, it would be interesting now to see what the movie would be like with Charlize Theron in that leading role, definitely.
I mean, if you take a look at the movies that Charlize Theron had done leading up to this film, she was in That Thing You Do. She was in The Astronaut's Wife, which, okay, I can see why there, as well as a few other films. But nothing really, I mean, aside from Sweet November and The Astronaut's Wife, nothing that really screams rom-com. And even those aren't really rom-coms per se.
No.
I mean, let's be honest, Charlize Theron could do pretty much whatever the hell she wants.
Yeah.
But I think they ended up with the better choice in Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah, definitely.
The movie is directed by Andy Tennant, who previously had directed Hitch, Ever After, and Fool's Gold. So you have someone with a lot of rom-com and at least romantic and comedy influences into their, you know, into their repertoire. And I think that shows in how this is directed.
Yeah, absolutely.
This movie actually did very well at the awards. Not to list all of them, because there are quite a few, but just a few standout ones here. At the 2003 GLAAD Awards, the film was nominated for Outstanding Film Wide Release, but lost to The Hours. At the 2003 MTV Movie and TV Awards, Reese Witherspoon was nominated for Best Female Performance, lost to Kirsten Dunst in Spider-Man. I don't know about that one. I mean, Spider-Man was big. I don't know if Reese Witherspoon got out-acted by Kirsten Dunst, but that's MTV. And at the 2003 Teen Choice Awards, Reese Witherspoon again was nominated for Choice Movie Actress in a Comedy. She lost to Queen Latifah for Bringing Down the House. Mm. And Candice Bergen was nominated for Choice Movie Villain, lost to Colin Farrell in Daredevil, and I can't believe someone lost to any, you know, lost to anyone for anything to that 2002 Daredevil film, but here we are. The movie, however, did win for Choice Movie Comedy, and Witherspoon and Josh Lucas won for Choice Movie Lip Lock. At the box office, this film did very, very well. It had a budget of $30 million. Domestically, it grossed $127 million, and worldwide, wow, $180 million. Mm. It was the number one film when it was released on the September 27th, 2002 weekend. And yes, you mentioned it. This film is 22 years old, so I can feel the back aching already here. It made $35.6 million, more than double the next film on the list, which was the debut of The Tuxedo, which starred Jackie Chan and Jennifer Love Hewitt. But the reason why we are here, not because Vanessa said, hey, do you want to actually do this film, is the critics. Over at Metacritic, this film has a Metascore of 45, and over at Rotten Tomatoes, the audience score is a really good 78%. The Tomatometer tells a different story at 38%. Now, I recognize that rom-coms aren't exactly going to be beloved by critics, but why the hate on for this one?
I don't know. I mean, is it because it is quite tropey? I think you mentioned that. In fact, there's something I need to ask you because we don't know, like, we don't get these here. What are grits? Is it potato?
You know what's funny? Because I'm Canadian. I just know that grits exist. It sounds like something sloppy. I've never actually personally had grits.
Right.
Okay. But and again, maybe that's just my perception of Southern cooking.
Yeah.
Although some of it could be very, very good. I just, in my mind, grits is something I don't ever want to go down that road.
Okay, cool. Thanks. I just wondered what they were. I think it is quite tropey. Is it particularly funny? Probably not. It's probably more on the rom than the com side of that. I suppose it must be a combination of those things, because, like, I don't think any of the performances are particularly bad. I don't think that I think actually some of the performances are actually quite good and quite funny. So I think it must just be because of the fact that it is a little bit tropey, and there are stereotypes. Looking at it now, there's a couple of things that haven't aged particularly well. So I don't know if that side of it maybe is what swung the critics, or like you said, the critics just generally aren't big fans of rom-coms. They just, you know, they're not very highbrow. They don't think much of them.
Damn critics. Mm-hmm. Although it's funny because we talked about grits a little bit, but one actual recipe that they mentioned in this movie, and I had to look this up because I was both intrigued and disgusted at the same time: bologna cake. And I had to look up. Yeah, I had to look it up because I'm sitting there going, bologna cake just sounds like something you say to someone when they're you. But yet. Here is the dish, okay? It is cake made with layers of sliced bologna, cream cheese, and I'm not even lying. This is exactly what I'm reading off Google here, with ranch dressing or other seasoning for the cream cheese, and I just vomited in my mouth as I think I said it. Who thought this was a good idea to make? This sounds like some drunk on some kind of really harsh hooch. And you're like, I got to cook something. What do we got in the fridge? Bologna cream cheese and ranch dressing. Well, put it all in a bin and see what happens. I want to know. I want to know. Dear listeners, I want to know if someone has actually gone out and tried bologna cake. Please, for the love of God, tell me that there is some kind of culinary value in this. I'm curious and frightened at the same time. But before we gross out more of our listeners here, let's get to the breakdown as to why this film got the rating that it did. We start with Reese Witherspoon, who of course played Melanie Carmichael / Smooter, because Melanie Carmichael, if that is her real name, of course changed her entire identity when she went to New York. But how was Reese Witherspoon in this for you?
I think she's perfect. I think she plays it really well. I think she's sweet. I think she's believable. I mean, I like Reese Witherspoon. I like a lot of the stuff that she does. I think she's a good actor, but I think she's good at the comedy stuff as well as like the more serious kind of stuff. Did you see the film she did? What was it called? Was it Wild? The one where she was like camping. She did some Pacific, Northwest Pacific, you know, it's like a long distance hike thing that you do. And she was like a recovering, I think it was like heroin addict or something. It was based on like a true story. And it was, you know, it was a much darker film. I mean, I think she can do that kind of stuff. She can do the serious stuff, but she's also really fun in things like this and things like Legally Blonde. And as we said before, Charlize Theron, I can't imagine, because I just feel like this is like Reese Witherspoon's movie. Like it's her movie. And she never like gets on your nerves either, I think, because that kind of character, I think, can become irritating sometimes. But I don't feel that with this character. I feel that she's quite likeable even when she's doing really, really stupid stuff. Like, you kind of understand it. I mean, I think actually, you know, she does, some of the stuff she does, if you think about it, is actually not very nice, because you get the impression she hasn't spoken to her parents for like 7 years, and they're just like nice people, like they haven't done anything wrong. So some of the things, actually, when you think about it, you're like, oh, actually, she's not quite as nice, but as a performance, I think she's very solid and very believable.
I mean, when you take a look at some of the actresses that were doing rom-coms in and around that time, actresses like Sarah Michelle Gellar, Jennifer Love Hewitt, you know, there are some who I could picture in this. Charlize Theron, probably not. So I think Reese Witherspoon is the perfect person for this. And I love the fact that, you know, when she's in New York, you know, her accent is very New York, but the longer she's back in Alabama, you can hear the Southern drawl start to creep out of it. And that aspect, I think of it, was actually very well done. Given her past history, I mean, I did not see Wild, but I mean, movies like Pleasantville, you know,
Pleasantville, yeah.
Right? Cruel Intentions. You know, there were some really good films. And yes, Legally Blonde, of course, kind of preps her for the, you know, that kind of, not necessarily rom-com, but definitely a little bit more the lighter-hearted fare. But I'm glad you pointed out the fact that Melanie isn't really the most likable of characters. You know, she's, you know, outing her friend. She's disdainful of everyone back in her hometown. She thinks she's above everybody, you know. And I'm going to talk about this when we get to Josh Lucas, who played Jake. Why the hell is he still pining for her after all this time? Like, honestly, the way she is at the beginning of this film, and I'm just like, why haven't you not put pen to paper? Have you not figured this out? But, and the fact that she's so ashamed of her past, and, you know, we don't necessarily really see an evolution of Melanie. You know, we see her have a little bit of fun and whatnot, but she still really wants to get the hell out of there and just get married. Melanie doesn't have the character arc I think that the film needs, or at least the script should have given her.
Yeah, there's not really a redemption, because really she just gets everything that she wants. In fact, I'm sure I read something once that that said that actually she was a bit of a sociopath who can, you know, with these like dual identities, who doesn't care about other people. And there is a reading of it like that, because what she does to Patrick Dempsey's character, and he's not the nicest character either, but I mean, that is really quite cruel. What she does to Josh Lucas's character, what she does to her parents, how she treats her, like you said, her childhood friends. But then she's still at the end of it, at the end of the movie, she still kind of gets what she wants, because she gets married and, you know, she manages to somehow balance both the life in New York and the life in Alabama. So I suppose there is a reading of it, really, where she's quite a sociopath who just gets what she wants and doesn't care what happens to those about her.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if you break down this script and just give generalizations, and you don't say Reese Witherspoon, because the minute you say Reese Witherspoon, in 2002, you get this image of a very wholesome actress, like very pleasant, you know, because when she's on screen, she is absolutely a pleasant actress to, mm-hmm. you know, to watch her performance, despite some of the performances that she's done in the past. Melanie Carmichael is not exactly the nicest of people, but yet somehow she gets away with it and the audience is supposed to actually root for her. I was feeling more for some of the other people in Alabama, but the thing is, yeah. is that you can make this work by just changing the script a little bit, you know, yeah. and you only have to do is change how she is in New York, and Alabama works, you know, because in New York, it feels like everything is literally going her way. You know, she's taking off as a designer. She's top of the world. She's being married to someone who's in line for a high political position. Very powerful. Like everything is going well for her. And it doesn't look like she's working that hard to do it. Gets to Alabama and can't stand being back home. If she was working so hard and like literally killing herself in New York and then realized the life that she left back there and how much fun she actually had.
Yeah.
Yes. Does it sound a bit like a Hallmark film? An absolute, like, all you need is Christmas and it's a Hallmark film. But it would at least give us a reason for Melanie to have that character redemption, because if New York was so hard on her and Alabama showed her what she was missing, that was just being able to dial back and relax.
Yeah.
A much better film. Josh Lucas, who played Jake Perry, the old husband, the one who needs to, you know, put his name on the paper. How was he?
I thought he was quite good. He's not an actor I know a lot. Funnily enough, I realised that him and Reese Witherspoon had actually been in another movie together. Do you know what movie that is?
I do not.
American Psycho.
Yeah,
Very different. Very different.
Well, given how you describe Melanie, maybe it's not that different. I could picture Melanie sitting there pulling in her business card. Look at the quality of this card.
You can actually see that. That is quite funny. Yeah, I thought Josh Lucas was pretty good. I mean, it's quite an easy part, isn't it? Like, it's obvious. I think you're going to sympathise with him. He's like a country kind of bumpkin type who... I suppose the only thing, and this isn't a criticism of the performance, it's maybe just the way it was written, like, there isn't much to the character. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He's, like, always, you know, trying to prove himself. He drives a truck. He goes out to the local, like, roadhouse or whatever to play pool and drink with his friends, and he doesn't, like, I don't know. It's quite... So that, again, like, this has nothing to do with the performance. I think the performance was absolutely fine, but I think it's quite a shallow written character. There's not really much going on there. I don't know what you thought.
I mean, I don't understand why Jake is holding on to this idea of Melanie. Maybe that's it. I mean, it's just the idea of Melanie, you know, first kiss, first love, that kind of thing. You know, he was the quarterback. He was the pretty girl in high school. I get it, right? But the thing is... At least this movie does him justice in that it's the little things that he does. Like when she gets completely pissed drunk and pisses off everybody at the bar, he's at least still making sure that she doesn't drive drunk to get home and brings him back to her parents. You know, he's not even blowing her cover at the glass shop when she's there with her New York friends before the wedding, you know, and he also makes sure, you know, they show him almost confronting everyone when, you know, Bobby Ray's, you know, after he's been outed and everyone's like, are you still the same person as you were yesterday? Good. Excellent. Then let's all have a drink. Right. Like these are all really, really good aspects towards Jake. So it would have made sense if it was kind of a reverse thing in that, you know, Melanie still, you know, in her heart still had feelings for Jake, even though, you know, she left for New York. You know, that reminder of more, you know, easier times. Jake makes sense in this relationship.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, yeah.
Again, it's still very Hallmark, though. It's so Hallmark. Like, I'm telling you, but an Alabama Christmas, that's basically what this remake would be. Patrick Dempsey as Andrew Hennings. You said that he, you know, Andrew wasn't necessarily a great guy. I'm curious where that comes from.
I get the impression that the whole reason that he's with Melanie is to piss off his mom, because she doesn't want him being with somebody like that. She's obviously wanting him to be with some socialite, political, old money people. And like when he proposes and they're in the limo, I think he says something like, "Oh, I can't wait to see the look on my mum's face," as if that's the only thing that he's interested in. I don't think he's a terrible person, but to me, it's almost just like he's a little boy trying to rebel against his mum, and that's the whole reason for his relationship with Melanie, basically.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that you point that out. And first of all, Patrick Dempsey, he's exactly what you need him to be, right?
Yeah.
He is the perfect person for the role, even though the role isn't as fleshed out as it should be. But when you take a look at, you know, at Melanie, at Jake, and at Andrew, each of them is trying to distance themselves from their past, right? Yeah. Melanie goes to New York, and even Melanie's mother was saying, you know, "I don't want you to end up like I was." You know, yeah. You've got Jake's mother who's like, you know, "You're just like your father," kind of thing. And you got Andrew who doesn't want to end up like his mother. You know, I mean, he clearly loves Melanie. Otherwise, you know, he would have been on that Learjet and getting the hell out of Alabama rather than come back and go, "Oh, maybe you can still be my wife." Oh, poor Patrick Dempsey. But don't you know she's a sociopath? But anyways, the thing is, I wish they had developed the relationship between Patrick Dempsey and Candace Bergen a little bit more. Like if we saw a bit more of the, you know, if she was even testing, like not testing, but basically like getting opinion polls on Melanie and how that affects her and how that pisses off Andrew, the fact that, you know, that Melanie is nothing to his mother except for, you know, public opinion, then that would have at least made sense as far as Andrew going, "Yeah, no, you know what? No, the mom's pissed. You go ahead. You go marry your old husband." That would have made sense. As it was, Andrew didn't feel as fleshed out, and a lot of his motivations didn't necessarily feel as full as they could have been.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think he could have done with fleshing out a bit. But I think Patrick Dempsey does the job well. I think he's perfect in that role. He's not something, I don't watch, what's that thing that he's in, that medical thing? Oh, what's it called? There's a medical thing that he's in that he's been in for ages. Is it Grey's Anatomy?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen that, but I think he's like the leading character or something in it. But I think that in this, he does the job well. But as you say, it would have been interesting to maybe get a wee bit more about his relationship with. But it just definitely came off to me that he was mainly just trying to annoy his mum.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with Patrick Dempsey is that I don't think you want him to be as, you know, let's put this out on Front Street, right? Josh Lucas has that very rugged former athlete kind of look to him, that very small town handsome kind of thing going on. You don't want, yep, Patrick Dempsey to mirror that, but to the same token as well, maybe if he did mirror that a little bit more, then it would feel like Melanie was trying to be with someone that reminded her of Jake. But then, yeah, you know, it comes into a full recast and, you know, then you have to, you know, rewrite the entire script. So I think Patrick Dempsey works in a New York sense.
Yes.
To counter. And maybe that's it. Maybe you need Patrick Dempsey to be not Southern. You need him to be very New York because that's what Melanie wants. Melanie wants the entire New York aesthetic, the job, the guy, the life. Like, that makes sense. And for that, Patrick Dempsey is the perfect person. But since, yeah, we already talked about her, Candace Bergen, who plays Kate Hennings, Andrew's mother, how delicious was she in this?
I love her in this. I think she's just absolutely I think she blows everybody else off the screen, to be honest. Like, when she's on screen, she's just... And there isn't much comedy in this, but she gets a lot of really good lines. I think she's fantastic. I think she's just funny. And just like really, I don't know how to say it, but like she kind of commands the scenes that she's in. Like, you're drawn to looking at her and not really looking at anything else. But I think Candace Bergen is fantastic.
I think this kind of falls into the whole Andrew thing, is that I wish they delved into her a bit more. Because Kate was the perfect person to be a bit of the linchpin, sowing discord into Andrew's and, you know, thoughts about marriage and whatnot. Like, I wish there was a bit more of Kate sending reporters or PIs to Alabama to find out more about Melanie, and at every turn, you know, like, we got a little bit of that once we realized that apparently there was a cat that was exploded near a bank or something like that, and it was all thanks to Melanie.
Such a bizarre bit of story.
I fear that something like that actually happened, and that someone wrote that in. It's like, oh yeah, you remember Johnny? Remember what he did with the cat? We're gonna put that in this film. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't understand. We'll maybe get onto that at some point, but that bit is wild.
But the thing is that you have someone as so good as Candace Bergen, and you don't utilize her to her full extent.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to put an actress of that caliber in there and you're going to give her a juicy role, make it juicy and make it. But then to the same token as well, it would take away, I think, from the, not necessarily the love triangle, because I don't think it's a love triangle, but it would take away from Melanie's Alabama rediscovery of her old life. So I don't know that there's a bunch of different directions that this movie is going in. And I don't know if it decided exactly which direction it wanted to go to in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fair, thank you.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mary-Kate Place and Fred Ward, who played Melanie's parents. I liked them. I want to know your thoughts.
I liked them both, actually. I thought they were good. I felt sorry for them, like I said, because they didn't do anything wrong. And Melanie's obviously gone to New York and gone, I'm just kind of washing my hands of you. Like, I'm too good for you now. You're just kind of like simple country people, and obviously our, you know, the dad, Errol, does all the, you know, like the Civil War reenactments and stuff. But I thought they were sweet. I thought it was quite funny because Fred Ward, I only know from Tremors, and he's also called Errol in Tremors, which is a strange one. But yeah, I thought, like, we've maybe kind of a running theme, they weren't that fleshed out. They were fairly one-dimensional characters, but I thought they were both really quite sweet. I probably like not as performances, but as characters, I probably liked Errol maybe slightly more than Pearl. I don't know if it's just because he just seemed
very much his own person, yeah.
Yeah, maybe there was just a wee bit more to him than her. But yeah, as a couple, I thought they were nice and they were believable.
The one thing I never understood about her mother is that it really feels like the mother is feeling all this guilt, because if Melanie felt like she had to get away to discover herself, how much resentment is her mother feeling about that? And is she internalizing it? I mean, the thing with Fred Ward, I mean, A, you mentioned Tremors, which of course is an absolute, like, just cult classic. Yeah. I remember the first time seeing, like, or at least knowing of watching Fred Ward was in Remo Williams' The Adventure Begins, which is an absolutely fun film. But he is very much one of those, not necessarily lead actors, but he definitely, any movie that he's in, he makes that role a lot better. And I think it's one of those things where I like the fact that he's not a bumbling father. Is he a Civil War LARPer? Yes, he is. Yeah, but everyone in the town is doing it as well. So, and the fact that, you know, even Melanie, after seeing her dad, it's like, it was kind of fun to watch him surrender. Like there's the part where we should have seen a bit more. Like Melanie seeing like just the relaxed nature of being back home and how she kind of missed that a little bit, even maybe even deep down, and maybe she was denying how much she was missing it. I felt like her parents were there with the potential for showing Melanie what she's missing, but that part wasn't fleshed out. It was almost like, you know, the mom was there to show Melanie's guilt and the dad was there to show a little bit of, you know, a more relaxed life. Jean Smart, who played Stella, who was Jake's mother, I couldn't believe it was Jean Smart, but B, how was she for you?
Yeah, she was fine. I mean, she doesn't have much to do. Like, she's not on screen that often. You don't get to know her as well as you get to know Earl and Peril. But, I mean, I don't think I know Jean Smart. Is she, you say her, like, you know, you obviously know her from something else. I'm not sure that I do unless I'm not thinking of something.
I mean, maybe it's across the pond thing, because she was, of course, was one of the main actresses in the show Designing Women. So the fact that she's a, you know, in Sweet Home Alabama makes sense given the southernness of the characters on Designing Women. So that kind of makes sense. I think in this case as well, Stella not necessarily humanizes Jake per se, but I think in a way she humanizes Melanie a bit, because, you know, here's the girl who married her son and then ran off to New York, you know, and has been trying to get divorced from her son. And yet when she shows up at the bar, Stella's like, there's my favorite daughter-in-law. It's like, okay, that tells me that Melanie was a good person while in Alabama. Stella was the only one who made me think that Melanie was a good person when she was back at home.
Yeah, that's true. She does serve that kind of purpose, because she is really keen for them to get back together, isn't she? So she must see something in Melanie, and she must see something in the relationship. But no, I thought as a performance, I thought it was good. I haven't seen or heard of Designing Women, so I don't know if that's something that we maybe didn't get here. I'm not sure. But yeah, I've not heard of it. But yeah, I thought she was good. Just really, I suppose maybe the whole purpose of that character, like you say, is just so that it makes you think there's a reason that Melanie and Jake should get together. So maybe that's all she really needs to do, I suppose.
The other character that helped humanize Melanie a little bit was Ethan Embry, who, of course, played Bobby Ray. Again, we needed a bit more of characters like Stella and Bobby Ray, in that those are the kind of people that are going to give us a reason to want Melanie to get everything good that's coming to her. Mm-hmm. How was Ethan Embry for you?
I thought he was really good. I really liked him. I thought he was fun. I thought he did show a little bit more of the real Melanie. And you got a little bit of depth out of his character. You got to know a little bit more about him. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've seen him in anything else, actually, but I thought Bobby Ray was and quite necessary, because out of all the, because there's a few of them, the kind of like childhood friends, I think Melanie Linsky plays one of the others, he's the one that does humanize Melanie the most. And then there is obviously this little, you know, when she does out him in the bar and stuff, there's that little additional bit for him, I suppose, that little additional bit of his character. So yeah, I thought I really liked him. I thought he was good.
If you're unfamiliar with Ethan Embry, we've actually talked about him on this podcast before, in the movie Empire Records, where he played Mark.
Oh, right. I never knew he was an Empire Records. Right, okay.
But he was also in movies, and this, you know, you'll probably recognize some of these here. Vegas Vacation, That Thing You Do.
Yeah.
Can't Hardly Wait.
No.
No, not Can't Hardly Wait.
No, I don't think so. I can't think, no.
Well, he is still acting today, most recently in Last Seen Alive, but in 2018, of course, he was also in First Man. So you know, there is a ton of stuff with Ethan Embry in it. But I think the nice thing about this is that, you know, here we have a closeted gay character in Alabama. And this is the one thing that they didn't do tropey. In that once he's outed, it's just like, okay, cool. Nothing has changed. That is one of the reasons why I think this film definitely got that GLAAD film nomination. It's important, I think, to have that kind of just nonchalant matter-of-factness about his sexuality and the fact that you know, Melanie drunkenly outs him and it does not matter. I think that's actually a good aspect to this.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. And as you say, because that could have played a different way. And the fact that it just, nobody really was bothered. I think probably was slightly ahead of its time. I like that. I did like that part of the film. Although I think what she does is pretty horrible. Maybe it goes back to the whole social thing. But then, again, that bit in the bar, she's really quite mean. She's not just mean to him. She's mean to all of them.
Yeah, it's very much a lash out thing. But then even later on, she at least admits the fact that she's lashing out at everyone so that people aren't looking at her, you know, and pointing out her foibles. And it's a defense mechanism. Not that it excuses what she does, but it at least explains what she does. It doesn't make Melanie a better person by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah. Just a bad drunk. There are a number of decent namers in this film in smaller roles. Melanie Lynskey, Rona Mitra as Melanie's friend from New York, and Dakota Fanning played young Melanie in the beginning of this. This has a very, very good cast, even though, you know, some of the names may not have been as familiar to a lot of people at that time.
No, it's a good cast. I like Melanie Lynskey, actually. I most recently saw her in Yellow Jackets.
Okay.
Did you watch Yellow Jackets?
I have not watched that show yet.
It's pretty... Well, the first season's better than the second, but it is pretty good. But I think Melanie Lynskey is actually a really, really good actress. Like, she's been in some really good stuff. And a couple of the others I'd definitely seen in small parts before as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm most familiar with Melanie Lynskey from Heavenly Creatures and from But I'm a Cheerleader.
Right.
Which is another movie that actually qualifies for this show.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Heavenly Creatures is a good movie. It's a really good movie.
You know, and of course, Rona Mitra, you know, in the one Underworld film that Kate Beckinsale didn't do, but also in Doomsday, which is a film that I actually have up on my whiteboard to cover on this show at some point in time this year. But Dakota Fanning, okay, I have to, I'm not dissing Dakota Fanning at all because I thought she did a very good job as young Melanie. The opening scene is young Jake and young Melanie on the beach, and you know it's a very cute little sweet scene until they're struck by lightning. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching this and I'm like, is God angry that they kissed? Because what the hell is going on?
Yeah, it's bizarre. It is bizarre. And apparently Dakota Fanning was only 7.
She was only 7. This was actually apparently her first ever kiss. Yeah. Like ever. But the thing is, like, I understand that the whole when lightning hits sand, it turns it into glass, because of course when sand is superheated, it turns to glass and it creates these wonderful little glass monuments. And you know, I get the cute Hallmark-esque kind of aspect of that, but I'm gonna tell you, on first watch, I'm like, oh, okay, so they're in the south, then the kiss, and lightning strikes down. Nothing good is going to come from this.
That's fair.
This is just where my head goes at this point sometimes. But the key thing here is that I think the pieces are there to definitely work with this. But what stands out to you? Like, now that we've sat there and dissected, like, the actors and the characters and whatnot, what is it about Sweet Home Alabama that did work for you?
I think it's just, it's straightforward, it's simple, it's a simple story, it's not, like, there's nothing, I mean, apart from Melanie being possibly a bit of a sociopath, there's nothing, like, dark in it, there's nothing, even, like, we've spoken about the storyline with Bobby Ray, it doesn't, you know, it just stays, the whole movie just stays, like, light. And it's sweet, and, you know, things work out as I think you're supposed to think that they should do by the end. And I think you hope that maybe it doesn't come across so well on in the film, but you kind of hope that Melanie has, like, learned a lesson and realised that she shouldn't be ashamed of where she comes from, and she's she's like reunited with all her kind of childhood friends as well that she'd maybe lost touch with. And I think as well there's this sense of this, like, small town. Like, I live in quite a small town, and I do quite like, and it is a bit tropey, but this idea of this kind of, like, southern tight-knit, close-knit community, and you know, this bar that they all go to and they all know each other. And like, I'm not much of a city person. I do like smaller towns, and you do get, I suppose maybe this is something actually, because I live in Scotland, there are little towns in Scotland that are probably like little towns in the south. You know what I mean? That have got these, like, pubs that, like, everybody goes to and everybody knows each other, and people are, like, you know, got together with people when they were at school and then, like, went on to get married. And so I don't know if there's just an element of, I understand it a bit because it's not too dissimilar. I mean, the town I live in is I think quite a bit bigger than, what was it, Pigeon Creek or whatever it is supposed to be. But I think it maybe just rings a bit of a bell, and that just kind of, and of course as well, when I first saw it, I was 18. Like, if I first saw it for the first time now, I don't think I would have the same affection for it. But I think it's partly to do with the age I was when I first saw it. I think I just was like, oh, this is so lovely. And I didn't think about all the flaws at that time. I just thought about all the nice things about it, and how much I enjoyed going to see it at the cinema. And that, like I said, I went with my mum, and I think the two of us really enjoyed it. I think maybe one of my friends was there as well. So there's probably a heavy dose of nostalgia involved in why I like this movie so much, to be fair.
One of the things that I'm very curious about is that when this film came out, of course, like, it made bank, right? It made, like, you know, you do the math on a $30 million budget and $180+ million worldwide box office. Like, there's no question that this film made bank. And yeah, it's not like I'm asking for a sequel, but I mean, keep in mind that this film came out in 2002. You know, so this is when a film like this can actually do well and dominate at the, you know, at the box office. Not that it had much competition from Tuxedo, because I'm sure that film probably qualifies for the show as well. But the thing is, if this film were to be made today, is this the kind of film that's going to make it into the theaters, or is this going straight to streaming?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think rom-coms have had their day a little bit. I mean, I'm trying to think of the last time a big rom-com made a lot of money at the cinema, and I can't think of the last time.
I think the last one might have been The Lost City with Sandra Bullock.
Oh, that was pretty awful. I watched that. Yeah.
See, I enjoyed that. No. Oh, my wife and I.
Oh, did you?
My wife and I went to the theater, and we actually had a lot of fun watching that film. Right. And I was sitting there thinking, okay, well, maybe this kind of film is coming back into the theaters. But, you know, most rom-coms these days seem to be going straight to streaming.
They do. They do. Okay, so that one aside, I can't think of another rom-com that's done really well at the box office in the last 5, even 10 years. And I think you're right. I think a lot of them now a lot of them go straight to Netflix. You see a lot of these kind of films on Netflix. So I think if this came out today, it would be a straight to Netflix, and it probably would have a Christmas.
it's a Hallmark film. To me.
Yeah.
But I think the good thing is that you take a look at a film like this with only a $30 million budget. You know,
yeah.
And at that time, you know, like, obviously there's a lot more that went into, cost of production, because of course to shoot things on film and whatnot, like I'm sure you could do that same film today because there's not a lot to it that would require too much. So you could probably do that film for about $15 million today, given today's technology, which makes it perfect for a streaming service like an Apple or a Paramount or a Netflix.
Yeah.
Also, for the record, there is apparently a gender swapped Bollywood version of Sweet Home Alabama starring Priyanka Chopra Jones. The movie is called Barsate, and I'm now curious to see what a Bollywood Sweet Home Alabama would look like.
Oh, definitely. That sounds fun.
Now I have to check if it qualifies. But before we go, okay, so we've gotten to this point. We've gone through the film. First question, before we get to our MVP, 38% is the critic score on this. Okay, just to refresh our memory here, 38% Tomatometer, 78% audience score. To you, where does this film sit?
To me, like 75, 80. But I do recognize that is a lot of just how I feel about it and when I saw it. As I said, if I saw it like you for the first time yesterday, my score would probably be quite a bit lower than that. And I think it's always important when you're talking about movies to recognise that some movies just have a special place in your heart when actually, objectively, they're maybe not quite as good as you think. But I think the critic score is harsh. I do think the critic score is harsh. What do you think of that? Because obviously you did just see it for the first time yesterday. Do you think the critic score is pretty harsh?
I mean, I think even my score would still have a qualify for this podcast in that under 60%. But I think it probably sits about that 53%. And I think that is, you know, that's giving a lot of credit to Reese Witherspoon and the charm that she's able to bring to Melanie, despite the fact that she is a cat-killing sociopath in this film.
The bit about the cat is, like, we touched on it earlier, right? But just to kind of maybe go into a wee bit more detail, when he's explaining it, he says something like, oh, the cat was terminally ill. She didn't want the cat to go into one of those things that sucks the lungs out. And I was like, what is he talking about? If you euthanize a cat, it's like an injection where they go to sleep. It's very peaceful. How would strapping dynamite to a cat be less peaceful than that? Do you think that that's actually a real, like you said, a real story that somebody's put in there because they're like, this actually happened?
I honestly don't know, but it just seems so far-fetched and out there that somehow, either this has happened.
Yeah.
Somehow, somewhere, some way, or like someone's got some real up dreams and they're actually putting it down into scripts. But the thing is, like, I understand the idea of, you know, you don't want the cat to suffer. Okay, you put it down, whatever. But to strap dynamite to it, and then it starts walking around. It's like, okay.
That bit's a bit wild, yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that there's a cat eating the cake at the end of the film, and it looks a little bit mangy, and you're sitting there going, oh, crap, they went back to that again, didn't they?
Yeah, and that's almost a bit fantastical, because at that point, the cat would have to be about 40 years old or something. So that... It does slightly take away from the movie a bit, because it's got this nice ending with a song, and then you think this cat that looks like it's got rabies or something is eating the cake, and it is a bit, yeah, I think I could have probably done without that. They could have got rid of the cat right at the end.
Yeah, that's one of those, it seemed like a good idea at the time, maybe not so much now.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, Vanessa, who is your MVP of Sweet Home Alabama?
Candace Bergen. Yeah. Hands down. Like I said, every time it would have been good if she'd had more, but as much as I think Reese Witherspoon is really sweet and really suited to this role, it's Candace Bergen, I think, that's just the best thing about it. And as I said, she steals like every scene that she's in. So yeah, Candace Bergen for me.
For me, it was actually Josh Lucas. And I think
it's... Oh, right, cool.
I think it's one of those things where they could have played him to be an absolute ass, but it's just one of those things where just the little things that they had him doing made him a much better person, and absolutely appreciate what he brought to the role. And yes, played very well against against Reese Witherspoon. So that's all good. Although I did have to give a shout out to Ethan Embry as well for his role as Bobby Ray, because he actually helped humanize both Melanie and Jake. And that's no small feat in this film, considering Melanie's character in this one here. Vanessa, thank you so much. Before we go, please let our listeners know where they can find you and the Movie Duel podcast out there on the interwebs.
Movie Duel podcast, everywhere you get your podcast, basically. I am also on Instagram at Vanessa Cordner. And come and find me if you want to say hi.
Thank you so much. And to you, our listeners, thank you for so much for listening to this episode of It's Not That Bad. Now, you guys know the drill. If there is a movie out there that you think is unfairly maligned or is just so bad that there is no way in Alabama that we can find anything good to say about it, hit us up on social media at Not That Badcast, or go to our website at notthatbadcast.com. And while you're there, make sure to check out all of our other shows, as well as our guest appearances page, where you can hear me on the Movie Duel podcast as well on one of the Quick Draw bonus episodes. Vanessa, thank you so much. Listeners, thank you so much. This is It's Not That Bad, a member of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Take care.